As protests and revolutions continue to erupt in the Middle East, it's inviting to draw some parallels to Latin America in the late 70s and 80s. Regimes were being overthrown, dictators ousted by military juntas, and civilians were bombed by their governments. In Revolution, The Year I Fell in Love and Went to Join the War, Deb Olin Unferth tells the story of how she dropped out of school and went to join the revolution, any revolution that would have her. It's published by Henry Holt, and I'm very pleased that Ms. Unferth has joined me now on this show. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Give us a sense of what you were doing before you left for Central America. You were attending a college, which you don't name, although I'm not sure why.
You know, I was trying to do the best that I could to sort of protect people. And so if you read the book very carefully, you'll discover the school. I can just say it's University of Colorado in Boulder.
Was it politicized at the time?
Yes, it was. There were a lot of protests going on. There were a lot of people who were constructing these little shanty towns on the Quad in support of South Africa. And so, it was pretty politicized.
And when you left, did you think that it was just going to be a temporary situation?
I did. I think that I wasn't exactly sure what we were going to wind up doing. And what we did wind up doing didn't fit what I had imagined.
Well, and when you say we, you're talking about you and your boyfriend of the time, George.
Yeah.
What did you think you were going to be doing?
I think that I had spent a lot of time in Mexico as a child, and we lived in a beautiful house, and there was a garden, and there were people who made us dinner and things like that. And so maybe I had that in mind somehow, but that isn't how it turned out to be at all.
You were going to go on a vacation and maybe help some revolutionaries at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's maybe how I was imagining it.
George had grown up Christian. Was there an evangelical spirit to this voyage?
Well, we considered ourselves to be, he did, and then I also followed in his thinking. He considered himself to be a Marxist and a follower of Kierkegaard and John Calvin. And so it wasn't exactly evangelical, but our actions were motivated by our Christian beliefs.
Well, most of the people in Central America are Catholics. And this was a time of liberation theology. So Marxism and religion were often being mixed until at least the Vatican said to the leftist priests, you better change your politics.
Yeah, and actually they had already done that by the time we got there. There were priests being excommunicated all over the place. But we didn't consider ourselves to be Catholics, but I think that everyone in all of the different kinds of Christians who were in Central America at that time were politicized.
What did your parents have to say about this trip?
Oh, they were horrified. I didn't tell them that I was going. I wrote them a letter from Mexico saying that I'd found God and I was going to Central America to join the revolution. So
you did speak Spanish, which helped.
I did speak Spanish, and they knew I spoke Spanish. So.
And what year are we talking about?
This was 1987.
Uh-huh. So this is actually kind of late in the Central American Revolutionary period, isn't it?
Yeah. Actually, it was about 2 years later that the Berlin Wall fell. And so after that, the Cold War ended, and all of these revolutions that were coming up all over Central America came to an end.
And the United States was not funding the Contras as it had in the past.
Exactly. And then in 1990, the Nicaraguans voted the Sandinistas out of power. And so that was just the end of the Nicaraguan Revolution.
So how did you travel? Where did you go to first?
Well, we took buses through Central America. We went first through Mexico and then through Guatemala and then to El Salvador and then Nicaragua and then to Panama. Well, through Costa Rica and then to Panama where there was a Noriega dictatorship.
And what were you thinking you were going to do? Obviously, you were traveling through these places, but not exactly tourists. Did you think you'd stop when you found the cause that was that was going to keep you in any given place for a while?
Well, our primary project was to interview different people who were involved with the revolution. And so we brought a bag of cassette tapes, and we brought a cassette tape recorder. And so everywhere we went, we would go up to the government palaces and ask if we could interview people. We would go to the churches and ask if we could interview the priests or pastors.
Did you have a project in mind?
Well,
other than getting a lot of tapes filled?
Well, George, my boyfriend, he was going to write his thesis on liberation theology, his senior thesis, which he did go on to do. However, I don't think we needed that many tapes in order to write that.
So this was almost like an excuse to simply see what was going on, to travel and to indulge a certain fantasy.
It was. I mean, then as time went on, we did want to stop and try to pitch in whatever way we could.
Were there tourists at the time?
Were there
some of these places? Were you bumping into tourists from the United States or elsewhere?
Well, it depends on the country. Each country was very different. In Guatemala, there were a lot of tourists. In El Salvador, there were absolutely none. In Nicaragua, there weren't tourists, but there were a lot of foreign volunteers called internacionalistas.
Mm-hmm. Who wanted to help the Sandinistas.
Yeah, exactly.
Last week, the International Court of Justice at The Hague ruled on the Google Map border dispute between Nicaragua and Costa Rica, and both sides have claimed victory in the dispute. Was there much dispute between neighboring countries when you were there?
Well, to a degree, there was. At that time, Belize was still being claimed by Guatemala. And so so when you would go to Guatemala and talk to people, they would talk about Belize as if it was just part of their own country. And then you would go to Belize and they would say that, no, they were independent of.
And Belize has remained independent.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that at that time it was still a little more blurry. I mean, I think that there are often small disputes like that.
My guest is Deb Olin Unferth, who has written fiction before, the short story collection Minor Robberies, also novel Vacation, which won the 2009 Cabell First Novelist Award and a New York Times Book Review Critics' Choice. She has written for any number of publications. Her book, Revolution, The Year I Fell in Love and Went to Join the War, is published by Henry Holt. So you were in Guatemala, which was claiming that it owned Belize. It had just elected its first civilian president. So was Guatemala now democratic?
You mean it at that time?
Yeah. I mean, how pure was the democracy in Guatemala? Because there have been elections all throughout Central America over the years, but that hasn't guaranteed democracy.
No. At that time, there had been many years of conflict and of where peasants were killed. There was the scorched earth policy in effect, where in order to get rid of the insurgents, military men would go to these villages and burn them to the ground. And that was still going on when I was there. Supposedly,
wasn't there a certain racial aspect to that? Because often the insurgents were indigenous people people who would have been Mayans or related groups before the Europeans came.
Yeah, it was like that. In Guatemala, there is a very big split between the people who are descendant of the Mayans and between people who are descendant of the Europeans, and so there was a horrible slaughter going on. It was
and then
awful.
You went to El Salvador, which was in the middle of a civil war at the time. Mm-hmm. The United States was calling El Salvador a democratic foothold in the region.
Yes, that was sort of ridiculous. I think that what was happening was that the United States was had a was engaged in a certain kind of propaganda and trying to make the American people think that there was peace in El Salvador, or that they were, you know, moving toward peace when they weren't.
I remember interviewing a nun who had gone through some terrible experiences in El Salvador. And when she came back, she was blamed by the U.S. government for being a communist, even though she said all she had wanted to do was to help poor people in El Salvador.
Yeah, well, liberation theology was a little confusing that way, I think, for a lot of people, because it does have a socialist underpinning to it, but that is not based on opposition to capitalism necessarily. It's based on the fact that the places where liberation theology was so popular was places where the split between the upper class and the lower class was very dramatic.
Well, we're thinking about the effects of an earthquake now in Japan, but hadn't San Salvador been leveled by an earthquake a year before you arrived?
Yes, it had. And at that point, when we arrived, there was still rubble and fallen buildings all over the roads. And it was just that because of the Civil War, there were so many resources were being diverted to in that war that there weren't enough people to come around and clean up the earthquake. So it was.
And there have been a lot of earthquakes in Mexico's suffered a whole bunch. And last year, Nicaragua had a 4.5, which is a lot smaller than the one in Japan, but still, that could be very destructive.
Yeah, that's happened. That whole region gets a lot of earthquakes.
While you were in El Salvador, you worked in an orphanage. How close were you to the fighting?
Well, we were sort of in the middle of the fighting, actually. What happened was that there were these villages that were set up for people who for children who had who were victims of the fighting that was going on. You know, their parents would be killed, and then these little kids would just go walking out of their villages with, you know, no one to take care of them. And so this orphanage had been set up, and it was supposed to be outside of the war zone, but the war kept, of course, moving around, as wars do, and so the orphanage ended up being right in the middle of the war zone.
And you just got a job there?
Well, they had a connection. They were partly funded by a church in the United States that George's mother belonged to. So she kind of put us in touch with someone who was connected to the orphanage. So that's how we ended up there.
And is that when George proposed to you?
It was just after that. Yeah, it was just after we left the orphanage that he wanted to get married.
Were you aware of how unromantic this whole thing was and how dangerous it was? One of the people you interviewed, Father Elucuria, was assassinated. You were living for a time in a brothel, weren't you?
It sounds unromantic and dangerous, and I understood that it was at that time, but it was also very romantic. I mean, I was really in love. I'd done this crazy thing. I was in full-flared teenage rebellion, so it was, in a way, for me, it was very romantic.
Well, how much of this was your beliefs, and how much of this was, I'm going along with my boyfriend?
I think a lot of it was I'm going along with my boyfriend at first, and then as time went on throughout the trip, I gradually began questioning all of these things. I mean, I was 18 years old, so I gradually began questioning a lot of the things that I had originally thought.
And you didn't marry George?
I wound up not marrying him. Yeah.
And he wound up in grad school, as you say, using the tapes from the interviews. You were at the El Inter Hotel, where Jimmy Carter had stayed when he was president?
This was, let me see. No, he was not president. This was after he was president.
But you write that gun battles erupted in the lobby. Who was fighting?
That was okay. So we're talking about the Intercontinental in Managua, in Nicaragua, and that particular hotel had been used as a base by the Somoza military and by the government for a long time. And so when there would be when the skirmishes began, some of those battles were fought right in the Intercontinental.
You were working at that time for the Sandinistas?
No, that was before.
Uh-huh. But then you, what did you do with the Sandinista government in Nicaragua?
Well, we showed up saying that we wanted to be internacionalistas, or foreign volunteers. And so we wound up getting jobs working for bike snap bombs.
And what led to the disillusionment? Was it just seeing the revolution up close?
No, not at all. I think that I felt pretty strongly that the revolution was good for Nicaragua. It was, I think...
Do you still feel that way? After all, the leader of the Sandinistas has turned out to be a rather, he's had to face all sorts of terrible accusations.
Well, he's a changed man. It's very
he was better
sad.
Then.
I think he was. I think that was a bright moment in Nicaraguan history that probably won't be repeated, at least not in the form of Daniel Ortega.
So have you returned to the region since?
I have. I've been back many times.
And do you think it's in better shape?
No, not at all.
Well, the Sandinistas came back into power, and you say that it's a changed Sandinista group?
It is. It's changed. Yeah.
Well, I guess somewhere down the line, maybe there will be hope for Central America, but not yet.
I think that there are a lot of good things happening there. I'm always hopeful.
Deb Olin Unferth's book, Revolution, The Year I Fell in Love and Went to Join the War, is published by Henry Holt. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.